Joining me now in the studio, I have Councilmember Glenn Wright. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you're one of those who feels that Promontory should do a lot more to provide affordable housing. In fact, it sounds like you think they could do upwards of 200 to 300 units.
I think if you use the same standards that we're using for other developments today, that would be an appropriate number. And for Mr. Najafi to imply that they couldn't possibly do that is, that challenges credulity. They're selling, these new houses will be in the $20 million price range. Most of the other houses there are at least $5 million. We have developers that are building that level of affordable housing for, with developments that are in the $500,000 to $1 million range. So his story on that just doesn't ring true.
And as we reported there, Councilmember Chris Robinson, again, talking about 35 to 40 based on the 2001 approval. I mean, there's a lot of daylight between that. You and Najafi?
Considerable daylight. I think the majority of us don't think his proposal was even remotely reasonable. It was a trivial addition to affordable housing. They have, on average over the course of the year, in the low 200s of employees that they just employ themselves. In talking to some of the residents there afterwards, they estimate that there's probably another couple hundred people that work there on a daily basis. And they've provided so far 2 units and promised to build 35 more, and now maybe 40, maybe up to 40. That's an offer that's not only trivial, it's insulting.
So the fact that it's Promontory that wants to open up the development agreement, that's why the council then has some say-so?
Correct. It's an agreement. It's a negotiation. Make us a reasonable offer. Don't insult us with breadcrumbs.
Okay. And then he says, well, we don't have to open it, and we could still just require people to buy 2 lots, and then they could build 15,000 square foot homes.
Have at it. I have no problem with that. He has rights to do what he has in his development agreement. He can pursue those.
All right. So do you think the affordable units, if they are built, need to go within Promontory or back into South Point where they're proposed?
I think that's subject to some of the negotiations I think we should have. The development agreement considers initially Promontory and then South Point as the destinations. I don't particularly think that either of those locations are necessarily appropriate for affordable housing. I think the county would prefer to see housing close to where additional affordable housing is already being built, where there's transportation infrastructure. But that's something we can talk about. Putting more housing at South Point, I don't think, is a great idea. You can see the congestion that's building in the Browns Canyon area now. And I'm not particularly in favor of increasing the density at South Point at this point. I mean, we have some difficulties there. We have several jurisdictions in that area that have, aren't coordinating planning. We seem to have sprawl development there, and everybody that's moving in there now has to drive someplace else for their daily chores. There's no grocery store. There's no liquor store. There's no restaurants. Tom Clyde had an interesting article in the Park Record a couple of weeks ago about how the Wasatch Back needs to start working together on planning. And the Browns Canyon 248 area, including South Point, is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. And I guess that the concern is that them, the employees working, living in South Point, but working in a development, that they would have to get in a car because there's no throughfare, right, between the Promontory property?
There isn't at this point. I think they will propose one. But that's not to say that all the people that would live, all the affordable housing area would go to people who are actually working in Promontory. You can't, who knows where they're going to be living or working.
Promontory has also offered to create the units with green features. What are those?
Green features, some of the things we've talked about with them, is, and this is one of the points I like, is zero energy ready homes, so that when we get renewable energy in the county over the next 10 years, those houses would not have a larger carbon footprint than they have a zero carbon footprint for their energy use. So I think that is a good idea. It's becoming more of a nationwide standard now, though. So I think it's good that they're willing to adopt that. I'm in favor of that, and I think it's a good technique. Yeah. But that doesn't unring the affordable housing bell.
You also said that the unit should be done with what you called a renewable energy tariff. What's that?
Well, that's the tariff that, understand our renewable energy program with Rocky Mountain Power will offer. We'll start with a renewable energy tariff that may be slightly above what your rate is right now. We don't think it's going to be very much, but every homeowner will have an opt-out provision. So we would require the homeowners to not opt out of that program.
All right, let's see. Elsewhere on the agenda, the expansion of the library hours at the Colville branch. Do you think this is a good idea?
That's a really interesting project, kind of remote sensing of people in the library at extended hours. The Colville Library has the shortest opening hours right now. And I think this is a really innovative approach to extending hours, where you don't have enough visitation to, at this point, support staffing at those hours. Could be a very interesting experiment.
So you think the plan provides enough security for the library?
Our security people have looked at that, and they think it will work pretty nicely, and it's been tested in several other communities where they're very happy with it, and they've seen that it's been effective.
Okay. So when will this pilot project get off then?
Probably in the next budget year. We're going to have to put in for a 3-year grant to start the program. So it's not imminent, and there's going to have to be some security work done on the building to accomplish the project. We'll have to get the grant, do some installation. We've been told that the installation is not a very complicated issue for that particular library, and that's one of the other reasons that we've decided that that's a good place to experiment.
Okay. Let's see. The council also approved the resolution to place the property tax levy on the ballot for the voters of the North Summit Recreation District. That was an easy decision, huh?
Yes. Right. Yeah, easy decision. Now the decision is up to the residents of North Summit.
Right. The North Summit Rec District has had two previous ballot proposals fail. So is this kind of a do or die thing here?
Essentially it is. But I think the rec board there is now reaching out to the population to help them understand, if you want recreation activities in your community, you have to be willing to pay for it. The county has been subsidizing it around the county for years, and out of the general fund. And we're in the process of cutting off all those funds to the three parts of the county, and the other two parts of the county have already supporting recreation with local funds. Okay. The good part about it is the North Summit Recreation District will have total control over those funds. They can, they will be the decision makers, not somebody on the county staff.
Okay. Off the top of your head, who did we appoint to serve on the Basin Recreation Board? Do you recall?
Oh. Yeah, I did not bring that information with me.
All right.
And then it was in our packet, though, I believe.
And then also a new member on the Board of Health.
And that was Doug Evans. I do remember that one.
Okay. Also, in terms of just looking at the news headlines of that last week, can Summit County, do you think, dispense medical marijuana, given the warnings from the county attorneys in both Salt Lake and Davis counties?
I think it's a potentially hazardous practice. And the rumors I hear is that the legislature is rethinking that option, and there may be a special session to address that particular issue. But we'll have to see what happens over the next few weeks.
Do you share those concerns, though?
I do. potentially we could lose, I'm thinking about a quarter of our health department funds. And if it was extended to other funds within the county, Meals for Wheels, Congregate Meals for Seniors, transportation funds, could be pretty significant.
That being that we're kind of going against federal law.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a risk. How large a risk, I can't say, but it's definitely a risk.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that'll do it today, Leslie.
Okay. Glenn, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Summit County Council Member Glenn Wright, you're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Summit County has unveiled its newly designed website. On the phone to detail some of those new features, I have Ron Boyer. He is Summit County's IT Department Director. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Leslie.
So it seems like it wasn't too long ago when we were announcing the now old website. How often does the county overhaul its website?
Well, we should be doing this at least every 4 years. We were a little delayed on this one a few months, but it's been the last one we rolled out was 2014.
Okay.
And we started this project last year in 2018 to get everything together so we could roll it out. We work with a consultant company, Civic Plus. They do a lot of community websites around the country, and we just have to get on their schedule, and they went through the process with us.
All right. So what prompted the redo? I mean, is it just something, like you say, it has to kind of happen every 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, it has to. I mean, with our contract, we get it every 4 years, but at the same time, after 4 years, you're looking at your website and we're saying to ourselves, okay, what can we do a little bit better? Because there's obviously some issues as your website grows. You know, all the information that we put out there, it was getting difficult for some people to find things. And we went through a process of looking at our analytics, what people were actually searching for on the website, and then getting some feedback from a lot of our employees, some of the pain points that they have when they're interacting with the public and trying to direct them, you know, we shouldn't have to direct them over the phone to the website. We want to make it so it's easy. And that's one of the biggest things that we started to look at with our analytics is, for the most part, people are coming to our website to look for property information. And so, if you've looked at it, we have a button right there on the homepage called Property Page, and that directs you to everything, mainly our GIS and some of our property records, which is the majority of what people are coming to our website to look for. That's our number one hit page when we look at our analytics.
Interesting. So do you kind of keep a running list of, I wish the website could do this over the next couple of years then to make those changes?
We do. And then anytime a program comes out, we have to see how are we going to work with that. For instance, Corey Forsling, who's our county treasurer, sat on our redesign committee, and one of the things that she was adamant about was we need to have a payment button, because we have several different, I guess, products that people pay, whether it be a dog license or a citation or even the garbage bill. We wanted to have a central place where somebody could come in and just take care of the business without having to search all over or to go to this department's page or this department's page. And so those are some of the things. You know, we had a committee of several people here that said, okay, what's going to make this work? And so they would bring those items to our meetings so we could improve it.
Okay. You can pay now the $40 garbage fee online, or do I have to mail that in still?
No, you can pay it online. It's through Republic Services, and we have a link on our website that'll take you there. But yeah, you can pay that online.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about just the how long it took. I mean, you've been spending what, the last 9 to 12 months on this?
It was at least 6 months. We had to get some things together, and in fact, I don't know if we have some new photos that we put on there, and we Started with a photo contest back in December. We got those, and then we had to give them to our the design team at Civic Plus. We also had to go through some meetings with them. Just one of the big ones we did was just a navigation consulting. So we had a navigation consultant meet with about five or six different departments, some of the big ones, just to get them thinking about, okay, what do we need to put on our page? What do we need to take off? So, yeah, it was over a six-month process.
Yeah. And I noticed, too, I mean, it looks great. Tell me a little bit about those photographs. You had a contest and then just selected winners, and they just get, what, bragging rights?
Well, we did give them a gift card, and we recognized them at a council meeting a few weeks ago. But yeah, we opened it up, and our committee selected about seven or eight photos, and then we sent that off to Civic Plus, and then they took their favorites and incorporated them into the website, basically using a lot of the colors and images that we have to go along with the theme of the colors on our site.
Okay. And I noticed right at top, people can create an account. What would this do for them?
So what this will do, you have what we have a Notify Me. So if on our homepage, you have a news flash. So there's different categories if you want to be notified about, say, an agenda item or any type of news that's going on or transportation projects. You can create an account and put your contact information in there, and then we can notify you when any updates come out. And the other thing with this is if we have forums online, if you create an account, those will auto-populate based on your account. So it's meant to ease some of the filling out forms whenever you go into a government agency. So if you create it and we have it online, it can just auto-fill those.
Okay. So what does something like this cost? I mean, how much did you have to budget for this?
Well, initially, when we purchased this in 2014, it was, I think we paid for the initial, it was around $40,000, and then we pay about $9,000 a year in support.
Okay, and so that's who maintains it then? I'm in terms of getting all of the information onto the page is just it folks in individual departments.
Well, we have one individual in our department at Wollstonecraft who is the webmaster, and he coordinates most of it. We also have the departments are responsible for their content, so they have to go in and verify it. If they need help with updating it, we'll help them. We have some that will do their own, like the planning department will take care of a lot of their own. The attorney's pretty active in updating their site, but a lot of it rolls back to IT.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. The site kind of had a soft launch in June. Any kinks to work out since then?
Yeah, we've had a few. Whenever you transition from the old site to the new site, there's a cutoff period, and so we've had some particularly agenda items and staff reports that were connected to the old site that we've had to update to the new one. That's something that's ongoing, but most of them, it was just like a four-week period where they were missing, and I think we've gotten most of those.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know about the new website?
The other thing would be, you know, we are going to be looking for photos in the future, so we're going to be running more of the contest to feature those. We're going to try to do those seasonally. The other thing would just be to sign up for an account if you're interested at all in any type of updates. I know personally I get the agenda meetings notices all the time, but we're going to try to do more of those, especially with the news pieces. Those will be going out whenever our Chriselle Murdoch posts those too.
Okay. All right. Well, Ron, it looks nice. So thanks for your time
well,
this morning.
Thank you. Have a good
KPCW News Time now, 8:36. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the 7th Annual Salt Lake Climbing Festival will be held later this month in Brighton. In the studio with details, I have Park City resident and executive director of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance, Julia Gleiser. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
So this is happening August 24th and 25th in Brighton. What happens at a climbing festival?
So yeah, well, first of all, the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance is your local nonprofit rock climbing advocacy group, and this festival is the one time of the year that we get to get out on the rock and increase our climbing knowledge and our skills. So it's a weekend of climbing clinics sponsored by our local guide outfitter services and a bunch of outdoor industry. Backcountry.com is our sponsor. And it's a weekend of climbing clinics where you can get out, whether or not you have climbing skills or not. We invite all people to try outdoor climbing or elevate your skills. All proceeds go back to the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance, and we do a lot of stewardship work for climbing access trails and replace fixed anchors here in and around the Wasatch.
So it's kind of the gathering home base is at the Millicent Chalet there at Brighton Resort, but then from there you just take off to different climbing locations?
Yep, the morning of August 24th, we all meet up at Brighton. It's at the Millicent Chalet, like you're saying, and we have a bunch of vendors up there that you can take out demo climbing gear. We meet up there, we have breakfast, and then we disperse around Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon for climbing clinics. One of our local guide outfitter services here, White Pine Touring, will be one of the guide outfitter services, which is great, volunteering their time to give back to the Wasatch. And then after people are done with their clinics, they come up to the Millicent for home base. It's an evening celebration where we have live music, Michelle Moonshine Trio, Pilates, yoga, silent auction, hourly raffles. It's a really fun time to camp and play some games up in the mountains. All proceeds, again, go back to steward climbing areas here locally. And then day two of the event, you can take another day of clinics on Sunday, August 25th.
Okay, so there is camping up there?
There is limited camping, first come, first serve.
Okay. And again, you say it's something for every level of climber, even somebody well advanced would get something out of this?
Yep, there are climbing clinics. We have, you know, things like big wall climbing. I know you've all seen the movies recently with Alex Honnold. We use a rope, but skills that you need to go up a big wall like that, or things like how to start to climb outside and top rope clinics as well. There's sport climbing, trad climbing, all kinds of clinics.
Okay, and then the cost to participate is how much?
It depends on which ticket you get, but if you just want to come up Saturday night, it's $30, and that's, you know, food and music and games. A single day of climbing clinics with a Saturday night ticket is $90, and then a full weekend is $150, and you'd be hard-pressed to find 2 days of climbing clinics or instruction for $150, so it's super reasonable price and a benefit for your local nonprofit.
Okay, no dogs.
No dogs, it's the watershed.
Yeah. Okay. What else is the Climbing Alliance doing?
So we have a lot of work happening in Lower Little Cottonwood right now. We went under lease last year for 140 acres of private property owned by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints there in Little Cottonwood Canyon. So with that lease, we are the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance and the Access Fund actually are local, your stewards of that property. So we've been hiring professional trail crews and improving climbing access trails that climbers have been using since the 60s and 70s, as well as replacing fixed anchors with more sustainable hardware, because those also were put in the 60s, 70s, and 80s and are starting to wear.
Okay. And in terms of what you do kind of year-long is what?
Sure, So we're an advocacy group. You know, we sit at the table with things like Mountain Accord and talking about transportation and how recreationalists can get outside and where to park and where to go to the bathroom and all those things that go into recreation. So the advocacy side of life, keeping public lands open for public use for human-powered recreation. We put on the climbing festival, and then we also do things like we have Climb a Mile in the month of March in the gyms, and that's like a month of where we all try to climb a mile in the gym. It's also a fundraiser to support basically our trail crews and the advocacy work that we do year-round.
Yeah, and of course we know the great granite walls there in Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon. Is there anything like that here in the Park City area?
So our closest crags are, you know, Echo Canyon as well as the Uintas we do work at, but mostly Big and Little, American Fork, Maple Canyon, Parleys. These are kind of all areas that the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance works, pretty much the greater Wasatch area.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us?
If you want to find more about the festival or about Salt Lake Climbers Alliance, you can go to saltlakeclimbingfestival.com for the festival. And for more information about the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance, it's saltlakeclimbers.org. We are a volunteer organization, and we welcome people to get involved.
Okay. Julia, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
That's Julia Geisler, the Executive Director of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Park City mixologists competed in a month-long cocktail contest for a chance to be crowned as Park City's top bartender, taking home some money and bragging rights. In the studio, I have the winner of the 2019 contest, Trevor Brown of Tupelo, along with the co-president of the Park City Area Restaurant Association and Deer Valley Food and Beverage Director, Jody Rogers. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations, Trevor, two in a row.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back out here today.
And we should note that you're like ready to like mix up the cocktail as we even speak here. But the winning drink is called La Vaquera. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, tell us about it.
So La Vaquera is a High West Double Rye whiskey-based cocktail. A little bit of Pedro Ximena's sherry in there as well. A hibiscus grenadine. Some lemon juice and habanero lime bitters from Bitters Lab out of Salt Lake to round it out. It's great, very well balanced, very refreshing for summer, a little kick at the end from the habanero lime bitters. Yeah, goes down well.
Yeah, okay. Tell us, I mean, most people order the standard gin and tonics, vodka and soda, Bloody Mary, screwdrivers. I mean, how do you get somebody to try something a little bit different?
The power of persuasion. We got a local High West whiskey product that draws in the crowds at Tupelo, certainly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people on Main Street are interested in kind of trying the local spirits, what's kind of new in the bar scene. And Bitters Lab does a great job of adding a kick at the end. So people can always be talked into a little spice in their cocktails.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's kind of like where we have gone. You know, I mean, we hear a lot about, you know, kind of the non-alcoholic mixes. And I think Bitters has played a big part of that, huh?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. So these bitters actually do contain alcohol in it. It's a kind of grain alcohol base that's infused with habanero lime. There's some gentian root and a bunch of other herbs and spices in this particular offering. So, yeah, it adds a little bit of, or a lot of flavor in, you know, just a couple drops, which is really fun.
Yeah, so that's you have to buy that at a liquor store then, huh?
Yeah, so these actually are available in specialty food stores. For some reason, it's still 40% ABV, but it's an exception to the DABC rule, I guess.
Okay. So what do you think? What makes a good cocktail?
Good cocktail is all about balance. You have to have a lot of flavors blending together evenly with nothing too overpowering. And I feel like this cocktail nails it on the head. You get a little bit of sour, a little sweetness from the pomegranate in the hibiscus grenadine, a little citrus, and, of course, kind of the spice from the double rye, which is why you use, High West brands this is the spiciest rye in the world, and it certainly comes off as such in this cocktail. You get that really kind of earthy spice to really, you know, balance it out and make it easy drinking, and every time you take a sip, you want another one.
Okay. So, again, this, you're getting a little bit of cash, and then what? You then kind of have bragging rights there at the front of the restaurant?
Certainly bragging rights. Mm-hmm. The restaurant, my staff kind of rallied around this, which was really fun. The management at the restaurant promised us a party again if we won this year, so that any good restaurant employee likes a party. So
sure, yeah.
And they certainly twisted the arms of the guests, I guess, to vote, but yeah, it worked out. It was fun.
Sure. And it's, maybe she can explain, Jody, you can explain to us, I mean, how does this all work?
Basically, the applications come in, and for the whole month of July, we try and drive restaurant business by having all the listed on the website, and people have to go to the restaurants to try the cocktails. Instead of everyone meeting in one place like we used to do it, if you recall, it became quite unmanageable and, you know, laws and legalities of all of that. So people go into the restaurants, enjoy a meal and a few cocktails, and then they just go online right there and then and vote.
All right. How many competitors did you have this year?
We had 24 this year, which is a big amount. Yeah. I mean, it used to average around 14 years ago, and so this is quite significant, big jump this year.
And basically anybody who wants to
Anyone involved in the Restaurant Association, you must be a member, and anyone involved in that can participate.
Okay. So it's basically just online votes. Is that how the winner is selected?
That's exactly right. So truly is voter's choice. We don't have any say in it at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you're already kind of thinking about next year, or are you just going to enjoy the whiskey for this year?
Yeah, I think we had a lot of demand for the cherry in the rye after the contest last year. So I think the La Vacchiera will follow suit for the fall. It'll probably be on the menu while it's still in season. But then, I mean, we constantly change the cocktail menu at Tupelo, so we're always looking for the next big thing, you know, tweak the flavors seasonally, and just really have a good time kind of creating new drinks on a weekly or monthly basis.
Yeah. So what does La Vacchiera mean?
It's Spanish for the cowgirl. So, yeah, a little bit. We have the cowboy on the bottle, just kind of blended well. It was a little softer, more floral, so we've found La Vacchiera to be fitting.
Okay. Well, so what are you going to do with your money?
That's a good question.
By the way, here it is.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Handed it over.
Got to get the photo op, of course. We'll get the cash out.
Yeah,
it's cash. No check.
Oh, cash. I know. That's unique. That's... Doesn't do
exactly.
No one does that anymore, do they? They
no.
say, do you have Venmo?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, congratulations, Trevor. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
I think you're going to mix us up here
we
get through some of the other local news. Anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I'd like to say this is a great opportunity. The Restaurant Association is all about restaurants, which most people think about food. So to have the bartenders in town, who we have so many and so many fabulous ones, be able to be the focal point, I think is really cool. So it's great. And if you're not a member and you want to be a member, jump online to our website and fill in the application, and Ginger will take care of you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks, and again, congratulations, Trevor. We're just going to get a little video here. People
awesome.
Can watch people can watch you do it. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now is 8:56.